You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As we chat early on this Sunday morning, the Rockets are now 13-4 on the season, coming after a 105-83 win in Memphis on Saturday evening. Pretty much a dominating performance throughout. Rockets got off to a 33-25 lead after the first quarter and were able to slowly build on that throughout the game. A lot of key storylines. Certainly James Harden, as always, leads the team in scoring, 29 points, 9 of 20 from the field. We'll break down all the key figures throughout this program, but I want to start with what to me has been the story of the season for the Rockets, and that's Clint Capela, because in his 27 minutes against Marc Gasol, known as one of the best defensive players in the NBA, at least from a one-on-one physicality standpoint, Capela on Saturday evening, 17 points, 13 rebounds, 3 blocks, 7 of 11 from the field, and plus 10. Gasol, by the way, was just 6 of 17, 15-9, so Capela significantly outshot him, he out-rebounded him, he had more blocks. Gasol was actually a minus 12 in his 32 minutes, which was second worst amongst the Grizzlies starters. This is one of the best opposing bigs there is in the NBA, and Clint Capela did more than hold his own. He dominated the matchup, and that to me is the storyline for the Rockets over this first month or so of the season. The evolution of Clint Capela and Eric Gordon, and even Eric. Now, it wasn't traditionally a great game for Eric. 12 points, 3 of 11 from the field, 3 of 10 from behind the arc. Eric's been a little sluggish with his shot the last couple of games. But Eric, in his 29 minutes, was plus 27, by far the best in the Rockets, which shows you that even if his shot is not there, that shows you the quality of contributions he's making from a ball movement perspective, and particularly his defense as well, where he's been more aggressive pressing the ball this year. But to me, the real key was Capela, because when you are winning the likes of those interior matchups against Marc Gasol, and then you have James Harden and Chris Paul in the perimeter, you're not just going to be good, you're going to be really good. And you look at, it's not just a matter of one or two games we're blowing out of proportion. The Rockets, 17 games in, they're 13-4 right now. Clint Capela in win shares per 48 minutes. This was a stat that I saw on Friday, so it may even be up after last night. But going into the game, Capela was second in the entire league in win shares per 48. The only player higher than him, of course, it was James Harden at number one. But yes, the Rockets actually have the top two players in win shares per 48, which I think accurately reflects the level of dominance that Clint Capela has given you this year. And as I said, you look at the schedule, folks, this has not been just a weak stretch that he could feast on. He's gone up against Marc Gasol 4 times. Rockets are now done with Memphis, it seems like, and maybe that's for the best of everyone, given Mario Chalmers and his propensity for all sorts of random injuries. What happened to Chris Paul? We know the little skirmish he got in with James Harden in Houston. But yeah, the Rockets played the Grizzlies once in the preseason and then 4 times, scheduling quirk, in the first month of the year. But yeah, that's 4 games against Marc Gasol, the 2 against Embiid. There have been all sorts of headline matchups. He went up against Miles Turner earlier this week, went up against Dwight Howard, Rudy Gobert. There have been all sorts of just big, big matchups for Clint. And he hasn't just held his own. He's thrived. So that's why, if anything, I think there's an opportunity for his numbers to get even better in the weeks ahead relative to what they are right now, which is just spectacular from an efficiency standpoint. I know that the minutes are not always there. But to me, the Rockets are being careful, especially with your bigs. You don't want to tax them over the course of an 82-game season, and especially the pace at which the Rockets want to play, more than you have to. We have seen games very recently. You go back to that three-game and four-night stretch from last Thursday through Sunday. Capela played 31 or more minutes in all 3 of those. So we've seen that he can extend it to starters' minutes when needed. It's just if the Rockets are able to have a comfortable lead, as they generally did Saturday night in Memphis, why not hold him to 27 and not put a almost 7-footer through the pounding that comes from running up and down the floor with the pace at which the Rockets play? But yeah, when he is giving you that level of production and he's not tiring out, And I know his free throws have not been, again, he's above 60% for the year, which is good. They have not been trending well the last couple of weeks. At least he went 3 of 5 Saturday night. That's a step in the right direction. But, folks, as long as he's over 50%, he's making enough free throws to where a Haka is not really going to be a viable thing for him. Of course, you'd like to see him stay in the 70s and 80s where he was very early in the year. That may not be realistic. But as long as he can make over 50% and stay where Haka isn't viable, folks, he is not just giving you quality production. He is giving you elite star-level production to the point where, you know, you give this another 15 or 20 games, and I think you're talking about Clint Capella as a very real all-star candidate, and, well, not just a big two, but a big three in Houston with Clint Capella as that third star player. That's how good it is, and again, when you see it happen not once, not twice, not three times, but four times against Marc Gasol, that just reiterates just how strong his level of production is. And again, this is a Memphis team that over the years has caused fits for the Rockets based largely on their level of interior dominance. We know the way that the Rockets want to play with pace, traditionally perimeter-oriented in the James Harden era. And when the Grizzlies have had success, they've been able to just kind of slow that pace down and rely on controlling the area around the bucket. And they just can't do that this year because of the presence of Clint Capella. Now, this game, yes, Memphis was without Mike Conley, who's out at least a couple of weeks with some sort of heel or Achilles issue. So that certainly made the Rockets a more talented team. And that's reflected in, well, the fact they won by 22, which says that. Get a 22-point win on the road. But beyond that, Rockets shot 18 of 43 from behind the arc. That's almost 42%. The Grizzlies from three were just 7 of 27. So yeah, when you have 11 more made threes than the other team, that makes the math just almost impossible for them to catch up. And without Mike Conley, the Grizzlies were certainly shorthanded in that regard. But to me, it goes beyond just the fact that the Rockets shot well. They shot well, and they owned the interior. And so that's how you're able to get a commanding 22-point lead on the road against a quality opponent. Yes, I would still consider the Grizzlies quality. It's not like, you know, if anything, they might have overachieved in Saturday night. Chandler Parsons, 7 of 9 from the field. Green went 6 of 8. They had some quality performances that were actually above what you would traditionally expect from them. But because the Rockets were good enough around the interior led by Clint, it ultimately didn't matter. And I want to continue on a theme that I was talking about a minute ago with Clint's minutes, because that to me stands out about this game. Other than James Harden, who played 36 minutes, no one with the Rockets played even 30. Ariza and Gordon were the closest with 29 each. Haven't mentioned Trevor's stat line yet, but he was actually plus 18. He and Ryan were the best amongst the starters in plus minus. Trevor, 8 points, 3 of 7 from the field. Ryan, 13 points, 3 of 5 from behind the arc, which hashtag road Ryan is finally starting to pick up steam again after his 24 in Phoenix the other night. But I really like the way that the Rockets are managing the minutes. That's going to be something to watch, and I'm going to talk about that more in the next few days, because the Rockets do not play again until Wednesday night, so it's kind of a long, protracted off spell. Good thing is that the Rockets are able to get back to Houston that game Wednesday, and actually this entire week they're in Houston, so they get to get home, rest up any tired legs, etc., etc. They are going to reevaluate Chris Paul. Maybe he's allowed to play even closer to 30 minutes after a few days off. That's always been the plan, is to keep him in that 20 to slightly above 20. He played 24 on Saturday night, and then reevaluate him when you get back home. You have a few off days and see if maybe he's ready to finally get ramped up to 30 plus minutes of true starters level minutes output. But this first month of the season, with the injury to Chris Paul, I've had a lot of people that have reached out to me both on Twitter and by email asking about the minutes, asking about Mike D'Antoni's propensity, and it is there, a tendency over his career to overextend his veterans. I think we saw it last year, most notably with guys like Trevor Ariza and Eric Gordon. First half of the year, they just simply had much better efficiency than in the second half. And while they can tell you a lot of things, at the end of the day, the most likely reason for their decline in performance is because, well, they had tired legs. It happens over the course of an 82-game grind. And Saturday, yes, the Rockets won by 22, but it's not as if there was extensive garbage time. Tarik Black played 4 minutes, Joe Chi and Bobby Brown played 2. So maybe if the game is closer and you're not winning by 22, you can add anywhere from 2 to 4 minutes to a lot of those numbers. But even if you add 2 to 4 minutes, then still you're looking at everyone other than Harden at 36 being 32 minutes per game or under. That, to me, is optimal. That is where I've been told the Rockets have their emphasis. Because I don't think you're going to see the Rockets all of a sudden putting in Joe Chi with 6 or 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter because they're up 20. Because, folks, in the NBA, things can change on a dime. This team is way too competitive to do that. I think if you're asking for, you know, the Joe Chi, Bobby Brown tier on the bench to play extended minutes in the fourth quarter, unless the Rockets are literally up by 30-plus, just a laughably insurmountable margin, I think you're going to be disappointed because every team in the NBA has lots of competitors. What I think you want is not just about minutes and blowouts. You want a more tight focus throughout the game on those minutes to where no one, even if the game is somehow close, is in a position to where they are going to be overextended. And when I have asked the Rockets about this, the answer I've always gotten back is that they want to keep everyone at 35 minutes per game or below. Maybe James Harden is a slight exception based on his extreme durability and who he is, but what they're especially concerned about are the role players, Ariza, Gordon. We saw a lot early last year when they got off to that 31-9 start through the first 40 games. You saw games where they would play 40-plus minutes, and that is just way too taxing. So if you're following the Rockets, it's not so much about, okay, if they have a 20-point lead, can we shave off a couple of extra minutes in the fourth quarter to keep those minutes artificially low? No, what the Rockets are, they're not trying to make it where, you know, they average 32 minutes to where, yeah, if we have a big lead, let's take out all the starters at 10 minutes in the fourth quarter so they play 25 minutes this night, and then that way they can play 38 or 39 the next, and it averages 32. They're not so much concerned about the average. What they are trying to make sure is that there are no games where they are overextended. Because to them, it's not about so much the average. It's about games in which they go far and beyond the reasonable call. Because that's, well, in addition to any long-term fatigue issues, that's also short-term how you get injuries if you ask someone to go far beyond what's reasonable for their body. So I think what you're seeing from the Rockets, it's less about any one individual game with the minutes, and it's more about now that you have Chris Paul back, let's keep everyone at 35 or below. Maybe Harden gets to 36 to 38, but I think ideally they'd have Harden right at 35 as well. I think that's the focus. They did it Saturday because, yeah, other than Harden's 36, none of your starters played more than 29 minutes. You had Luke Bamute, who returned from his illness, PJ Tucker. They each played 21 off the bench. Nene played 16 minutes. By the way, Nene, let's give him credit. Only scored 2 points in the 16 minutes, but 5 boards and 3 assists was actually plus 16, which is incredible for 16 minutes of play. So give him credit. Didn't do it the traditional way in terms of scoring a lot around the basket, but certainly he rebounded well, and more importantly, his passing, his distribution, the ball movement with that second unit, Nene, Eric Gordon, as I said, Eric plus 27 in his 29 minutes. Ball movement overall was really good with that group. And of course, you give credit to Chris Paul as well for that, because Chris plays a lot with the second unit when James comes out. And Chris, 17 points, 6 assists, 6 of 11 from the field. What I really liked from Chris was that he was 4 of 7 from behind the arc in his 2 games since coming back. Certainly the Rockets have won both by 20-plus, which is a great sign for what you have with Chris Paul. But beyond that, he just looks so much healthier. It does not look like a guy in Oakland. He's moving freely. And then you can see when he shoots the threes, there's explosion, there's lift. It's not like the shots that just looked painful in Oakland that came out so flat. So, yeah, a lot of positive signs with Chris Paul. But where this ties into the minutes is because now that you've got Chris Paul back, no one needs to be overextended. Because in that stretch without Chris Paul, yes, that was a time I will defend the Rockets for overextending the rotation. Because if you want to get off to the kind of start that they did, and, well, successfully did, because they're now 13-4 on the year, they did not have the depth. They tried to play Demetrius Jackson. They tried to play Bobby Brown. They even signed Isaiah Cannon. None of them worked. And so if you're missing Chris Paul, a guy who, when healthy, is projected to play 30 to 35 minutes, you are going to have to overextend some guys if you want to get through that. Now, if he was out for the season, I think you'd have to figure something else out because it wouldn't be reasonable. But I think the Rockets, they're betting that, hey, we can do this for a month, especially early, and still have it to where there are no detrimental long-term effects. But now that Chris Paul is back, you're able to have a legitimate 9-man rotation, even 10 if you want to throw in Tarik Black at time to time, but I don't think it's reasonable to say you have 3 centers in the rotation, so I'm going to go with a 9-man rotation, your regular starters, and then Eric Gordon, Bamute, PJ Tucker, and whoever your center is, Nene or Tarik Black. Now that you have a legit 9-man rotation, other than Harden and maybe Paul, but even Paul when he's fully healthy, I think you probably want to cap it about 32 minutes per game. There's no reason to extend anyone unless they're playing incredibly, incredibly well. more than 30 minutes. And with having 9 legitimate NBA rotation bodies, yes, it's very reasonable to cap those minutes. So that's where I think you're seeing an emphasis from the Rockets now that you have Chris Paul back in the fold. With 9 rotation players, that covers everything from guards to bigs. There is no need to overextend anymore. And the question that I've asked is, how do you keep it to where the version of certainly Eric Gordon, but you're starting to see Trevor Ariza round into form as well. How do you keep the versions of those players that you have seen in the first half of the past couple of seasons into the second half in the playoffs? And I think the answer for the Rockets, of course, is you don't have these games where you push them past 35 minutes closer to the 40s and where you're just asking for some sort of little nagging injury to take hold, which, of course, over the grind of 82 games can become much more than just one isolated injury. So now, yeah, with the Rockets this healthy, this deep, you're looking at a team to where other than Harden, you shouldn't see anybody playing more than 35 minutes. And I think that's a testament to the depth of the roster that Daryl Morey put together. And I know it's been frustrating the first month of the year, but it's one of those things. If any team loses a guy that's a top 10 player to the level of Chris Paul, it's going to be tough. But now that he's back, I think you're seeing the Rockets, certainly they're playing well from a team perspective. Again, they just outclassed Memphis on Saturday night. But beyond that, the level of production you're seeing up and down the roster, to me, nothing was out of the ordinary. Nothing is not replicable. Like, you see a 22-point win, and sometimes you think, well, did somebody play above their heads to win by 22 on the road against a quality opponent? No. Everyone, Chris Paul, as I said, 17-6, Harden 29-7, just another ho-hum MVP night at the office for him. Clint Capella, as I said leading off, he's evolving into a star at this point. Ryan Anderson, another game where he contributed well from behind the arc, 3 of 5. And then, you know, you had your energy off the bench from Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker, particularly defensively. There's nothing in this that, from a Rocket standpoint, cannot be replicated. It's just a matter of how do you keep these guys fresh so that you get the same level of contributions in March and especially April and May. And folks, minutes to me are the key. And you go all the way down, as I said, Eric Gordon, even though he shot 3 of 11, he's plus 27 in his 29 minutes. That is a remarkable level of production. So to me, yes, minutes are a huge storyline, but now that you have Chris Paul back, it's amazing how that minutes issue is sorting itself out. And if that does, then yeah, folks, the Rockets really are this good. And yeah, it's time to start watching them for potential other things as well, beyond just an impressive win in Memphis on the back of an even more impressive win in Phoenix the night before. Again, on this 2-game road trip, plus 26 and plus 22 margins. It's amazing what that will do for your overall point differential. And that brings me into the final point, which is look at where the Rockets are now after 17 games, more than 20% of the way into the season. I know it's early. I know it's not even Thanksgiving. But folks, the Rockets are in the number one spot in the Western Conference after 17 games. That's more than 20% of the way. Their point differential now is plus 8.6, which is second highest in the entire league, trailing only the Warriors. The Rockets are at a point now, I think you should be tracking the Warriors. The Rockets almost got some help on Saturday night. The Warriors actually down 20-plus points to the Sixers at the half. They did ultimately come back and get the win. But folks, the Rockets are 13-4, and Chris Paul has basically only been himself for 2 games of the 17. Now, he did play the first one in Oakland and was instrumental in helping the Rockets get that win there. But Chris Paul is just now rounding into form, and yet the Rockets are 13-4. The point differential is as good as it gets outside of the Warriors. There's no reason to think that there's some regression coming. The Rockets are this good. And then when it comes to the Warriors, folks, the Rockets already have a win over Golden State, and they only play them 3 times. The next 2 meetings are both in Houston. What that means is the next 2 meetings, each in January, if the Rockets just get 1 of those 2 against the Warriors, the Rockets will have the head-to-head tiebreaker over Golden State by virtue of winning 2 of the 3 games. There's a pretty simple path now. All you got to do is win 1 of 2 home games over the Warriors, and then if the Rockets and Warriors end up tied, the Rockets would get the number one seed, which, of course, could mean home court advantage throughout the playoffs. It's a big deal because, yes, you want that Game 7, if there is, in a very tightly contested series, to be at Toyota Center. I know you can say that the Rockets have played so well on the road this year. I know 4-3 at home, 9-1 on the road, blah, blah, blah. Spare me. When it gets to the playoffs and you have that level of intensity in every gym, it's the same way as the Astros. I know some of you hate the, you know, cross-sport comparisons, but the Astros, they were a better road team than home team all year until the postseason. They were 8-1 at Minute Maid Park, and there's a similar dynamic in the NBA. I don't care how good of a road team you are over the grind of 82 games. It is different in the playoffs when gyms are just full and revved up from the tip. You want those meaningful games to be played at home within the friendly confines of Toyota Center. So yeah, the Rockets are within just one game, one home game against Golden State of having that tiebreaker. And then if they do, folks, I know the Warriors are supposed to be a better team, but we are deep enough into the year. Again, the Rockets are a half game up on Golden State. They have the tiebreaker at the moment, and they've done all of this with Chris Paul mostly on the sidelines. Now the two games that you have had Chris Paul back, you have won by 20-plus points, 26 and 22. And, well, the Phoenix game, they could have picked their margin. They could have won that game by 40 or 50 had they really wanted to. So this is a point. I know that the Warriors are still the favorites. If I had to make a bet right now on who gets the Western Conference's number one seed, of course I'd place it on Golden State. However, sports have a way of surprising you a lot. And at this point in the season, I don't know where the losses are coming from for the Rockets. I think the next time that they're even underdogs in the game is probably Christmas Day. And even that, I'm not so sure, because that's at Oklahoma City. We know the talent the Thunder have. They're still below 500, 15 games into the year. That's the next time the Rockets even could be underdogs in a game. And that's, again, a lot of these metrics, the plus 8.6, all the positive things you're seeing, that's with Chris Paul just returning to the lineup this week. So when you see a team that's this good, I don't see a reason why you don't follow every other team in the league, the Warriors included. Because if Clint Capella can give you this level of production where he's throwing up 17, 13, and 3 on nearly 70% shooting against Marc Gasol, dominating one of the better big men in the NBA yet again, if you're getting that level of production on the interior with the likes of James Harden, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, I don't know that there's any team that you can't compete with. So yes, I know this goes against the expectations. I know it goes against the conventional narrative. And I know there's this popular thing that, well, the NBA, there's all these twists and turns, but we always end up where we expected to at the end of the season. A lot of times that happens, but not always. As I wrote last week in my column for Sports Talk 790, the Warriors did not become the Warriors until guys like Draymond Green, the second rounder, all of a sudden became stars. Even Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, these are back half of the lottery guys, and they stepped up and became, in Curry's case, a perennial MVP candidate. And that was, you know, for all the talk that they have about Durant, folks, the Warriors became the Warriors before Durant. They won their first title without him, then they won 73 games, the most in the history of the NBA. None of that was Kevin Durant. That was internal growth. That was just chemistry, strides forward by key players. It wasn't supposed to happen. It just did. And at this point, again, over 20% of the way through an 82-game season, that is not a small sample size. The Rockets are winning at an over 760 clip, almost 77% of their games, with Chris Paul barely having played. That's how dominant these role players have been. Now, all of a sudden, you're getting Chris Paul back. He looks healthy. By the way, I like that the Rockets, they kind of got creative. They said they keep him to 20 minutes per game these first two back. They actually inched him up to 24 on Saturday, which I like. I don't like the idea of going straight from 20 to 30 or 35. See how his knee responds to a few extra minutes. And assuming it holds over well, make it all the easier to get closer to 30 when the Rockets next play Wednesday night against Denver. But getting back to the broader point, which is that the Rockets are giving you all this level of production with Chris Paul barely having played. Now you have Chris Paul stepping in, and of course, he looks like he hasn't missed a beat. His chemistry with the role players, especially Ryan Anderson, looks great. From a shooting standpoint, he's shooting over 50% from three these first couple of games. Had a double-double in the first one, then 17-6 in the second. This looks like a team that is every bit as good as its Scotty record, every bit as good as the point differential. And when you look around the NBA, other than the Warriors, it looks like a team that has more talent than everyone else as well. So you combine those things, and then with the fact that the Rockets do have a half-game lead right now on the Warriors, and even if you say they're tied in the loss column, well, the Rockets have the tiebreaker because they have a head-to-head win over the Warriors, then yeah, I do think this is a point where you need to start tracking Golden State. Because until I see something to the contrary, and I'm not seeing it right now, I'm going to believe that the Rockets are this good, that they are as good as their numbers, certainly the team as a whole. But then you go down the list, as I said, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, the role players that you're seeing take all these huge strides to where, in the case of Capella, I don't think you can even call him a role player anymore. He's pretty much an all-star at this point through 17 games. Folks, I'm not going to wait for the other shoe to drop. Maybe it eventually does, and if and when that happens, we can adjust. But for right now, to me, the Rockets, they are what their record says. There is nothing to suggest that it's fraudulent, and I know it sounds crazy to say that you could legitimately challenge the Warriors, and ultimately, you know, my experience watching basketball says that, you know, if I had to bet, of course I would still bet on the Warriors. I'm not picking the Rockets. All I'm saying is, what I've seen so far, I would not just assume that the Rockets are competing for the number two spot. Based on what we've seen so far, it is not out of the realm of possibility that the Rockets could make a real push for the number one and being as dominant as Golden State is. It's unlikely, but after 17 games, it's a lot more possible than I thought it was before that. I'll put it that way. I was optimistic about the Rockets going into this season, and through 17 games, folks, they've exceeded even my expectations. And again, that's 17 games in which Chris Paul has only played three of them. So, folks, I think it's at a point now, I'm not going to say fully buy in. I'm not going to say that, you know, they're ready to take down the Warriors. All I'm saying is over 20% of the way into the season now, we need to be open to at least the possibility that, yes, you should be tracking these Golden State games, because the Rockets, they're good enough to compete with anyone, both from a, you know, one-on-one individual game matchup standpoint and also from an overall season standpoint in terms of record comparisons and getting ready for the playoffs. I would not write anything off. The Rockets, to this point, everything about them screams legitimate contender as good as any in the NBA. And, folks, I don't know how better to say it than that, so I think I will leave things right there. As always, thanks to you guys for tuning in. If you're not already following me or the show on Twitter, you can do so at Ben Dubose or at Lockdown Rockets. You can also email us, lockdownrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Also, subscribe to this if you aren't already. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, TuneIn. Just search across wherever your favorite podcast player is for Lockdown Rockets. We're on most of those networks. Subscribe to us. And also, if you could, leave us a 5-star rating. That's what helps us look good to advertisers, which is those are the folks that are able to, that are responsible for me being as available to you guys as we are, the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. As far as the plan for this week, again, I wanted to start with this conversation of Rockets-Warriors because with the Rockets not playing again until Wednesday, I feel like that this is a week to kind of have some bigger picture discussions because it's not like either game on the road trip was particularly close, and the Rockets don't play again until Wednesday, so there's a lot of off time. So I'm going to try to get some national perspective in the next couple of days. I've got some interviews in the works. That's what we're going to be focusing on during that first half of this week, and in the second half, of course, it's back to business when the Rockets get on the court again Wednesday night against the Denver Nuggets. So next couple of days, stay tuned, trying to line up one or two good interview shows for you guys about what we've learned about the Rockets, as I said, through this first 20%+ of the 2017-2018 season, and then Wednesday get back to basketball when the Rockets return to Toyota Center finally. It feels like they've barely been home this year. 7 home games, 10 road games. But yeah, the Rockets are back in action at home for this entire Thanksgiving week. And yeah, hopefully I'll see a few of you guys out there at Toyota Center starting Wednesday for what should be a pretty joyous environment, I would say. When the Rockets playing this well, I would hope that Rockets fans are pretty excited to see this team because, yeah, they're certainly deserving of that level of support. Anyway, until then, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. Thanks again for listening. Have a good Sunday. Go Texans. I'm hoping for the best. Whatever happens, you should listen to Locked On Texans. That's our sister podcast on this Locked On Podcast Network. But yeah, even if Tom Savage lets you down, be thankful that the Houston Rockets are not. And yeah, we'll talk more about those Rockets in the days to come. For now, enjoy your weekend. Look forward to talking with you again soon, right here on Locked On Rockets.